You are listening to the Already Gone podcast, sharing stories of the missing, the mysterious, the murdered, and the lost. Before we begin, I want to say thank you to those of you who attended the Generation Y Insight Already Gone podcast meetup in Kansas City. A big thank you to Aaron and Justin from the Generation Y podcast for being such good hosts and tour guides for my visit. If you aren't familiar with the Insight podcast, this would be a great week to check them out. I was a guest on their show, and we discussed the 1999 disappearance of Mikkel Biggs from Arizona. It was a pleasure working with Charlie and Allie. Today, we travel to Speedway, Indiana, a planned community adjacent to Indianapolis. The tiny town is located just south of the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, from where it took its name, and dates back to 1912, when the community of homes and businesses was created for workers at nearby factories. In 1978, Speedway was home to a Burger Chef restaurant, one of more than 500 locations nationwide. The chain had roots in the area. The first Burger Chef opened in Indianapolis during the 1950s. Working at a fast food restaurant is a rite of passage for many teens. I certainly did my share of work slinging fried chicken at a now three-lettered establishment that shall not be named. While people tend to look askance at those working in the casual food service industry, it's a great place to learn about the work world. It's where I learned to make change, develop patience, and work alongside people I wouldn't encounter otherwise, skills that have served me well. In 1978, Speedway, Indiana was a relatively safe community, certainly not a place where anyone expected something like this to happen. Many of you are too young to remember Burger Chef. It was bought out and absorbed by Hardee's in the early 1980s. I actually have fond memories of the Burger Chef location I grew up with in Metro Detroit. They were the first fast food restaurant to offer fun meals for children. McDonald's Happy Meals were introduced in 1979, and Burger Chef filed suit against them, but lost that case. It was nearly 11 p.m. on Friday, November 17th, 1978. The Burger Chef in Speedway was getting ready to close. There were three employees working with 20-year-old assistant manager Jane Freed that night. They were Daniel Davis, Mark Flemons, and Ruth Ellen Shelton. You can almost picture the scene, one of them sweeping and mopping the seating area out front, Jane counting the registers and setting up tills for the morning shift, while the other two are wiping down counters, packing away ingredients from the toppings bar, and doing the important end-of-day cleanup so the next day's opening would run smoothly. What do we know about the people working at Burger Chef that fateful night? 18-year-old Ruth Shelton was one of three children, soft-spoken and active in her church. She was a student at Northwest High School in Indianapolis, where she was known for her aptitude in math and business. Ruth had given notice at the Burger Chef, but the manager asked her to stay on a week or two longer while they filled her position. 16-year-old Mark Flemons was a sophomore at Speedway High School and the youngest of seven children. He came from a devout Jehovah's Witness family. I believe that Mark was the youngest of the four people working that night. 16-year-old Daniel Davis was a junior at Decatur Central. An honor roll student, Danny loved photography and planned to follow in his brother's footsteps and join the Air Force when he graduated. 20-year-old Jane Freed had worked for Burger Chef for a few years, but only at this location for 6 months. She was a 1976 graduate of Avon High School in Terre Haute, Indiana. Well-liked by co-workers and customers, Jane had been an assistant manager there for only 3 months. As part of the end-of-day routine, employees took trash out to the dumpster. Probably Mark and Daniel did this because those bags can be heavy and cumbersome. Police theorize it was at this point that two or more men entered the store in an attempted robbery. We can't be certain what happened next, but we do know that assistant manager Jane Freed was the only employee working that night who had a car, a white Chevy Vega. Investigators theorize that after the store safe was emptied, the four employees, Jane, Mark, Ruth, and Danny, were forced out of the store at gunpoint. Some or all of them loaded into the Vega, which was followed by one of the robbers in their own car, or maybe a van. Around 11:30 p.m., another employee showed up to the restaurant. He found the doors unlocked, the lights on, and no one around. Seeing Jane's purse in the uncharacteristically messy manager's office, he called the police. An empty roll of adhesive tape was on the floor of the manager's office. The cash deposit envelopes were gone, the registers empty. Officers from the Speedway Police Department responded. They assumed the employees helped themselves to some cash and went out to party. Let's pause here and reflect on this line of thinking. Four employees have vanished, the store is not properly closed, nor is it locked up, and law enforcement doesn't investigate. Shrugging off the situation as kids making bad choices. Yes, I have big feelings about this misstep by law enforcement, but in fairness, who would come upon this scene and think kidnapping or quadruple homicide? It wasn't until Saturday, when families reported their children missing, that law enforcement started working this case like a serious crime. The FBI was called in. The scene at the restaurant looked like a kidnapping. The community could talk of nothing else. Where had they disappeared to? Jane and Ruth wouldn't take off and leave their purses and jackets behind, would they? On Saturday, an unknown Good Samaritan stepped forward and offered a $10,000 cash reward for the safe return of the four. Saturday morning, Jane's car would be discovered, abandoned, about a mile from the restaurant and just a block and a half from the Speedway Police Department. The driver's door was locked. The passenger's door was unlocked. Her car was from the early 70s and probably had manual locks, meaning whoever exited the car on the passenger side didn't lock it behind them. On the afternoon of Sunday, November 19th, four bodies were found, 20 miles south of Speedway in rural Johnson County. All four had been murdered. In a strange twist, there were three separate methods used to dispatch them. Daniel Davis and Ruth Shelton had been shot several times with a 38 caliber handgun. Their bodies were discovered laying side by side. Yards away, the body of 20-year-old Jane Freed was found. She'd been stabbed repeatedly. At autopsy, they recovered the blade of the knife broken and lodged inside of her, but the handle of the knife was not at the scene. Mark Flemons, the only non-white victim of the attack, was discovered nearby. He'd been badly beaten, possibly with a metal chain. Flemons also had a head injury that he appeared to have sustained an hour or two before he died. Did he fight with his attackers, or was he injured while attempting an escape? Either way, he was beaten and left for dead with his co-workers. If the bodies had been discovered on Saturday, Flemons may have survived the attack. At this point, you would think law enforcement has a lot to work with. Three crime scenes. First, the location where the bodies were found, then Jane's car, and finally, the restaurant. Well, it's 1978. Law enforcement isn't as forensically savvy as they are today. Mistakes were made. The first, and easily the worst mistake, is that the restaurant wasn't locked down as a crime scene. When Saturday morning arrived, employees opened the store. They finished the cleaning not done by the night shift. It pains me to think about floors being swept clean, and then mopping away any traces of blood that might exist, that counters and doors were wiped down, erasing fingerprints. Trash was taken to the dumpster, and the dumpster then unloaded into a landfill somewhere. It was Sunday or Monday morning before the store was forensically searched. We can only imagine what clues were lost or contaminated during that time. The bodies of the employees were left near the road in a hilly, wooded area in a quiet part of Johnson County, Indiana. It was about 3 p.m. Sunday afternoon when residents out for a walk discovered the remains and notified authorities. At the wooded site where the bodies waited, Indiana State Police, who had jurisdiction over the case because the victims were transported across county lines, raced the sun to gather evidence and photograph the scene. Much of the searching was postponed until Monday morning when daylight allowed them to properly search the area. Obviously, police worked the case hard. This was a terrible tragedy for the community, the violence, the brazen attack at the store. Unfortunately, there wasn't much to go on. A witness did come forward and say that he had seen two men parked in the Burger Chef parking lot after 10 p.m. the night of the attack. Police interviewed the young man and had him work with a sketch artist. Two drawings were created, one of a fair-haired, clean-shaven man and another of a bearded man. Police were certain this was the information that would break the case. When the sketches didn't lead them to a name, they had three-dimensional clay busts of the two made up. Tips came in, but nothing moved the case forward. Burger Chef put up a $25,000 reward for information leading to an arrest.
It's Burger Chef and Jeff.
Rooting burgers, no one's happy here. Even the dogs frown.
Not for long, Jeff. My new Fun Burger is going to put a smile on every face.
Puzzling pickles, what's a Fun Burger?
Well, it's a delicious burger with a smile on the wrapper and a prize inside, like this flying top.
Or maybe a dune buggy.
Yes, or perhaps a bubble pipe. The Fun Burger with a surprise prize, only at Burger Chef.
Incredibergable!
Days after the sketch was completed, police located the man they believed was the bearded suspect. They approached him and talked with him about the murders. Bearded man couldn't provide an alibi, but police didn't have enough to link him to the crime. Apparently, within a day or two of being interviewed by the police, bearded man decided it was time for a new look, and he shaved, leaving him looking nothing like the sketch or the clay bust associated with the crime. His neighbor was identified as a fair-haired man from the eyewitness sketch. By early 1979, a third suspect, known only as Shotgun Man, was identified by investigators. Law enforcement went to the prosecutor and attempted to work out a deal. If one of the three suspects, fair-haired man, bearded man, or Shotgun Man, would confess and turn on the others, a plea would be arranged. None of them took the bait. All three walked away without so much as an arrest. Ken York, a former detective with the Indiana State Police, now retired and working as a private investigator, believes he knows who committed the crime. His theory has at least two men and possibly as many as four involved with the robbery turned quadruple homicide. He said that two of the men are alive and living in Indiana. I agree with his theory that at least two and possibly additional perpetrators were involved. Three different methods of killing the victims? Seems like at least three people participated in the crime. Sergeant Bill Van of the Indiana State Police says the clay busts are still at the station, waiting to be matched to a suspect. Police hope to find the handgun used to shoot Ruth Shelton and Daniel Davis. The handle of the knife that killed Jane Freed is still out there, as is the chain used to brutally beat Mark Clemens. Early on, there was speculation that the Burger Chef murders were related to drug activity. Police have roundly denied this. It's been mentioned more than once that what probably happened is that when Mark and Danny opened up the back door to take out the trash, the robbers stormed the store demanding money. That's when one of the workers recognized them, which caused them to shift from robbery to kidnapping, and again from kidnapping to murder. Remember, Jane Freed had worked at Burger Chef for a few years, but at this store for only a couple of months. Could one of the robbers be a regular customer at a location she worked previously? Is that how the plan went from robbery to something much, much worse? Also, why drive all the way to Johnson County to kill them? Was the area known to the perpetrators? Driving 30 minutes to an out-of-the-way location seems pretty risky. All of this carnage for approximately $580. In today's money, was worth about $2,000. If you break the $2,000 down by the four victims, it's pretty bleak. If you have information about this case, please contact the Indiana State Police They are working leads as they come in and consider this case open and active. Also, because this is a particularly grim case, I saved a tidbit for the very end, something that will restore your faith in humanity. Don't miss it. If you haven't subscribed to Already Gone, please take a moment and do so. If you haven't reviewed the show, please leave a positive review. Reviews help people discover the podcast and learn about these cases. Thank you to Melissa San Diego, Heidelberg D, and PUD1899 for your 5-star reviews. I need to also mention Joe, Jenalina, Heidi, Kyle, Jerry, and Tracy for reaching out with suggestions and feedback. You can find Already Gone on Facebook. We're on Twitter at AlreadyGonePod, or you can reach me via email, host@alreadygonepodcast.com. There's also a website for the show, www.alreadygonepodcast.com. Finally, thank you to Luke Superior for our music. You can find Luke on SoundCloud. To end the show on a high note, one of the victims, Mark Flemons, a high school sophomore, was the youngest of 7 children. His family could not afford to purchase a headstone for his grave. In January of 2015, Jake Query, a disc jockey at 97.5 FM, Indianapolis, decided to right this wrong. He took to Twitter and asked his followers to kick in some cash and provide a simple stone for Mark's grave. The $800 needed to purchase the stone was raised in just 15 minutes. Mark Fleming's grave is no longer unmarked. Well done, Jake. Very well done.